Hey everybody, it's JT. What is on your holiday meal shopping list? Well, I would suggest Painted Hills Natural Beef. It is some of the best beef in the world. And your friends and family will be thanking you for a long time if you serve Painted Hills Natural Beef for your holiday meals. And now you can buy it online just by going to PaintedHillsBeef.com. Use the code BBQNATION at checkout and save yourself 15% on your order. Give Painted Hills Natural Beef a place on your table this holiday season.
It's Barbecue Nation with JT on a Northwest Lifestyle Weekend. Now here's JT on FM News 101.
Everybody, welcome to the nation, the Barbecue Nation. Normally we talk about barbecue and grilling and smoking, and we always have a lot of fun on the show. Well, today we're going to have a lot more fun. It's going to be a little different. I have the greatest pleasure, and if any of you ever listen to my shows over the years and or my TV work and that, you know this next person I'm going to introduce means a lot to me. It's my honor to introduce to the Barbecue Nation truly the man who inspired me to cook. And have fun with life. I think that's one of the things I always enjoyed about him. Graham Kerr is going to be here with us today in just a couple seconds. You know him as the Galloping Gourmet. And finally here on The Nation, the cowboy cook finally meets the Galloping Gourmet. Ladies and gentlemen, Graham Kerr. How are you, Graham?
I have been so looking forward to this. I'm just thinking of cowboy and galloping. The galloping cowboy. There we go.
Yes, and let me tell the story very quick for those of you who don't know. When I was a small child, I told Graham this the other day on the phone. When I was a small child, I lived in a very rural part of Oregon, and we had my father's sister used to stay with us at night. Her husband had passed away, and she didn't like staying alone, so she would come out to the ranch. She got there about the same time I got off the school bus. We would go in, and Graham's show, The Galloping Gourmet, would come on, and we would watch it faithfully every day. My aunt would write down the recipes, and then the next day when she went to town to check on her house and do the things she did, she would bring back all the ingredients for the recipes. And I was about 11, 12 years old, and I would try to cook what Graham did. Not very well, I must say, a lot of times. But that's how he got started. But I never missed your show. So there you go.
How interesting, because when I was 11 to 12, my dad had a job as a hotel manager. And so I got to play in the kitchen.
Oh, yeah.
And I was 11 to 12 years of age when I played in the kitchen. And the chef was from Provence. And my dad had said to him, could you teach my son how to cook? Monsieur, he said, listen, my father, he helped me to cook, and this is like deja vu. That's the first time I've ever heard a Frenchman say deja vu. So that's how I began, too. And I think I was probably about as good as you were in the kitchen at that stage.
Well, it was fun. My dad was kind of a... You know, he even though he worked in town, he was still a rancher and a cowboy at heart. And sometimes some of the things that I was trying to explain to him one time what clarified butter was, and he wasn't buying that at all.
I can really understand that.
So Graham, you've had a very, very, very interesting life. You've done a lot of things. And like I told you the other day, I always envisioned you as the Errol Flynn, kind of the swashbuckling guy on TV, the cooking. But the main thing is you always seemed to have fun when you were cooking.
Yes. Well, I was commanded to have fun. You see, when I was 11 and 12 and learning to cook at home, I was also learning how to fall in love because that's when I met my wife Trina at school. And I was 11, she was younger, she was 10. So the thing was that it was Trina who said you are the most unutterably boring man in the entire world, and you really need to do something about that. This was when I was positioned between Peyton Place and the Avengers at 8 o'clock on a Tuesday night nationally in New Zealand. And if that sounds a bit wonderful, let me tell you, the pro TV came on at 6 and went off at 10. there was no daytime television. And I was boring to her. And the result was that I said to her, okay, if you're so clever, why don't you produce the show then? And she said, okay, I will. And she never produced anything in her life. But she began then to get me to be less boring. And so I have been commanded for almost 1,800 television shows not to be boring. That's the reason I'm having fun.
That's a wonderful story. I never knew that about it. I knew Trina had produced a lot of your shows, but I didn't know she ever called you boring.
Oh, yes, yes. And she was right. I had a producer who said, look, we're going to try and make you less boring. Because, you see, I was on television at 25 years of age. And although I'd been raised in the hotel business and I'd been through food school and I knew all the basic concepts of French cuisine and that sort of thing, I still had this imposter syndrome. I thought, standing on television on a national basis, talking about food to people when you're 25 years old, I mean, come on, you don't know enough to have a job like this. And so I put so much effort into doing everything exactly right that I was like Al Gore.
Did you invent the internet, or what did you do?
I mean, Al Gore before global warming.
Okay. There's always that joke about Al Gore saying he was the Secret Service agent that was less serious than the other Secret Service agents or something. I don't remember the punchline, but he always looked like that when he had his sunglasses on. So Graham, when you started, and you know, you said you learned to cook in your father's hotel that he was managing and doing that. Did you really know from that time on that that's what you wanted to do? I mean, that you really were passionate about it?
You know, I've gone back, writing a recent book about the whole experience. I went back to try and find out where the seed was that really came up like this violent plant that became an obsession to me about food. And I think it was, I graduated from the kitchen when I was 15. I was quite tall for my age, and they gave me the job as being chef de l'ange, which is a classic term, but cooking at the table side.
Mm-hmm.
And you do a crepe Suzette or steak Diane, and you set things on fire, you know, deliberately, and get a good tip. So my very first couple that I ever served that way, I did crepe Suzette, and I learned the story about how it came about, and I did the whole thing, and they loved it, and they gave me a big tip, and I think that's when I thought, I love this thing of preparing something, telling a story at the same time, and having people taste what I've done and enjoy it. For me, that was a closed-loop situation. Took place in less than 15 minutes.
Yes.
And for me, that, and when I look back upon it, I can understand why television was such an amazing thing for me. It was that first experience repeated in 1960. I mean, that was way back.
Oh, sure.
It was 47, 48, you know.
Yeah.
So that's the reason, I think.
Yeah, no, it's just the passion about it, I guess. I've had a lot of passions in my life. I mean, I had the horses, I had the showing, I did, you know, writing, whatever. But I must say that when I get in the kitchen or out on the grills, what have you, that I'm so focused on that, but I'm also having fun, you know, and it's just, it's just become such a part of me that that's why I asked the question to you.
And I suspect, isn't it, Jeff, for you as well as me, when you're out there and they know of you, of course, and they see you doing your thing, you really do have their attention, and you really have something that you can give to them that you value and that you know that they can value later.
Absolutely.
Why wouldn't one be enjoying an experience like that?
Always have fun. We're going to take a break. We're going to be back on The Nation with my food hero, and actually one of the heroes in my life, really, Graham Kerr, in just a couple minutes. Don't go away.
Moaning out is one note song. You can think about the woman or the girl you knew the night.
It's full-flavored radio, Barbecue Nation with JT on FM News 101.
You get a shiver in the dark, it's raining in the park, but meantime.
Some of the rhythm. Welcome back to The Nation, the Barbecue Nation here on KXL and the Radio Northwest Networks. If you want to email us, you can do it. I suppose, if you have those capabilities. Or even if you don't have those capabilities, you can try. You can email us at barbecuenation@kxl.com or recipes. If you send me a recipe and I use it on the air, I'll send you a prize myself. How about that? Also, say hi to a couple of our affiliates, KWRO in Coos Bay and KMED down in Medford. Howdy, and thanks, and I hope you're enjoying our chat with Graham Kerr today, the Galloping Gourmet. Graham lives in the Seattle area. What possessed you to settle down up there, Graham?
You know, that's a very good question. I think it's because the Skagit Valley drew me. Skagit Valley's got 91,000 acres of arable land, good, real river bottom soil. And it's becoming a very diverse area. You know, there's grass-fed beef in this area, which I'm sure you would be thrilled about, and lots of grass-fed lamb starting to be introduced as well. And aside from that, it's a small farm with a dedicated small millennial farmers who seem to think that although what they're going to do is really small, that they are making a positive contribution to the well-being of the planet at the moment by planting well and planting organic and doing the things as well as they possibly can. It's a wonderful thing to see. So I wanted to be part of that.
So when you were, let's jump back just one step. Actually, it's a lot of steps, but when you were growing up in England and that, did you ever think about that you would end up living in the United States on the West Coast in a beautiful area like that? I mean, did that ever come across your mind?
Never, never, never. I wanted to be the managing director of the Dorchester Hotel in London and be able to be visiting royalty and have them call me Graham.
Well, I will call you Graham. There's not much royalty with me.
Oh, yes, but you are. You're the cowboy.
I'm the cowboy. Jiminy Christmas. So tell me, you know, I've made it a kind of a thing in my life to every experience I've tried to learn something, good, bad, or indifferent. And whether that's in the kitchen or in life or in my other activities that I do, how important has that been to you?
You know, at every turning in the road, it seems there's another lesson. And the only one that I am so thrilled with at the present moment is, I call it living beyond immediate self-interest. I think all of us as human beings at every stage of our life are self-interested people. I mean, if we weren't, we'd get run over by a bus. You know, we've got to look out for number one. But in a culture like ours, which is trying to sell us something all the time by every possible means, we are immediately being confronted with upgrading our life somehow, and they appeal to our self-interest. Look at the vacuum cleaner you've got. My vacuum cleaner sucks twice as much dirt out of the carpet as yours does. Let me show you. And then we are occupied with the idea of my dirty carpet now and how I can have a cleaner carpet. That's self-interest, and it's immediate, and they've got to sell it now. Well, I just think that if we slow down enough, that's what I'm trying to do, to just say, let me think about other people around me, not just myself all the time. If I could just do a 50-50 and be a little less interested in self and a little more interested in other people, I could make a difference.
I think that's so true. I mean, I really do. And as I've gotten older, I think that's become more prevalent in trying to reach out and help people a little bit. It doesn't have to be, how do I want to say it? It takes some effort on the individual's part who wants to help, and a little bit of effort on the person that may, or the group that needs the help, but it doesn't take that much. It just takes a little thought and a little time, to me.
It's just, I love the way that you say little. The other thing that I felt strongly in my life is the words, do a small thing and do it well until it's done.
Mm-hmm.
There's so many little things that I've grabbed, rabbit trails that I've gone up in my life, which I haven't done that well, honestly. And I just haven't gone far enough up trail to be able to get to any kind of conclusion. So I'm just trying nowadays to do something and do it well and then have that sense of satisfaction, that rather like that dish, you know, cook it well, serve it to somebody, they like it. And there's a fulfillment that's taken place in a very small thing.
Oh, yes. You know, and I guess sometimes I think my wife thinks I'm a little needy. Well, she might think that a lot, actually. But because when I prepare dinner and I serve it, and I will always ask, is your food all right? I mean, it's the same question. I don't need a lot of accolades. I just want to know if they're enjoying it. That's all I need to know, you know?
I've done exactly the same thing 44,000 times. I know. Trina used to say, you are obsessive compulsive. And I said, no, I may be borderline, but I'm not really full-blown. But I have made real effort at knowing what I've cooked for her and how that responded to her health. And I've been keeping a journal about that for over 16 years. And so when I can put I put my son in the air with a question mark on my face and she gives me the thumbs up, that's cool. That means I've nourished her and delighted her at the same time.
Yeah, isn't that great? We're going to talk more with Graham in a minute, and we're going to talk about the changes that he's made in the last few years about his cooking and portions and that thing when we come back on Barbecue Nation after this.
Traveling in a fight combi, on a hippie trailhead full of zombies. I met a strange lady. She made me nervous. She took me in and gave me breakfast. And she said, do you come from a land down under?
It's a Northwest Lifestyle Weekend. Now, with Barbecue Nation, here's JT on FM News 101.
If there's one thing in my life that's missing, it's the time that I spend alone.
Welcome back to the Nation and the Little River Band here on the Radio Northwest Network. Graham Kerr is on the line with us today. And if I sound a little tongue-tied, it's well-deserved because I've been observing him, watching him, trying to copy his style and learn from him, even though we've never met in person for 40-some-odd years. I'm not going to give you the actual number, but there's a lot. So anyway, it's just such a pleasure to have him on the show. But I do have a trivia question for you, Graham, if you know this. Do you know the only place in the United States where coffee is grown commercially? I always throw some trivia in the show.
If you say United States, I would then say on the Big Island of Hawaii.
Absolutely, absolutely. You win the prize.
I had a house up in a coffee plantation in near Kona, Kailua Kona in Hawaii. So well done. That was a great tribute.
Yay! Excuse me. You've made some changes now. When I first started watching you a while back, and I'm going to say that those kind of general terms, that way we don't have to share the actual time and dates. But, you know, the flamboyance and the cooking and the rich food and all that, is luscious. But over time, and especially the last, 15, 18 years, something in that, you've changed. You did some time. You took a couple of years and you went sailing around the world. And, of course, Trina had some health issues, and that kind of changed your outlook a little bit on food and portions and things. Would you share with that with us?
Yes, certainly. You know, I think that business of pleasing people is wonderful and should always be there. But what happens when you please people, and in pleasing them, you actually do them damage? And I got to know about Trina because both her parents died young from heart disease, and her brother had a massive stroke and died. So this has a way of getting your attention. And she, when she was 53 years old, she had a stroke followed by a heart attack. And I was told in the hospital, make your peace with her now. I don't think she's going to survive by this EKG. Well, she did survive, and she was a quadruple heart bypass candidate at 53. She had a 365 cholesterol and a very low HDL, which means that she was at super high risk from a genetic point of view.
Mm-hmm.
But I hadn't helped that by feeding her with the richest food in the world as the Galpin Gourmet. We went 28 times around the world, found the most fabulous food. We ate sometimes six meals a day. And it's not surprising that this poor, wretched woman, you know, was harmed just genetically in the first place. But then my behavior on top of that really didn't help. So I spun the wheel and did a U-turn as quickly as I could. But I wanted to know how I could do that and please her at the same time, because you could pull a rug out of somebody and say, no more meat, no more bacon, no more cheese, no more butter, and all that sort of thing. And I had a cardiologist friend who said, eating less fat isn't necessarily going to add years to your life. It's just going to seem like it. And so it's not that there's no point in literally destroying the joy that can come from the table. The big thing is to identify the foods that she loved to eat and reduce the volume of those things if they did her harm, and increase the volume of those things if they did her good. And that's all I did. I just spun the wheel and went in a different direction and very purposefully created for her a different kind of cuisine based upon her preferences, not upon a dietary list, but her preferences.
You know,
28 years, we had really exemplary, wonderful feedback from the medical fraternity, who said, boy, are you ever doing this right?
You know, I think that's such an amazing story, because it's no secret that when I stopped riding horses and doing, I was very physical, 14, 16, 18 hours a day for many, many years. And when I stopped that and went to work full time in the media, I gained weight. Go figure. Because I was still eating two cheeseburgers, for lunch, because I could do that when I was younger, and I burned it all off. Well, when you got older and you weren't doing that physically. But I think one of the things that you just said was so important is I'm not a nutritionist. I understand nutrition. I can obviously read a label on a package. I understand, you know, beef and pork and all those things. But when I see people doing these diets, and I don't want any emails about this, people, or phone calls, so just bear with me. But, you know, no carbs, no this, no that. Everything is no. And it's not based on a positive thing. You're not going to go through the rest of your life and never eat a slice of bread. So it doesn't make any sense to do that to me. If you just do what you did and focus on, you know, good quality nutrition and what you like and what you will eat, but balance it in portions, I think you'll be all right.
I'm convinced of it. You know, it's a very big industry, and one in which people can write a new book on diet and they can sell 50, 100,000 copies of it just like that, because we are all so desperate to try and hear what it is. But it's in our own head. As individuals, we're as clearly different as our fingerprints are. And it's as well for us to understand, I know what I like to eat and what I don't like to eat. So make a list of what I like to eat, reduce the volume of the things which might possibly do me harm. And that's very simple. Saturated fats is one thing. For some people, it's a real, real problem. For some people. Then carbohydrates, which are refined, that means bad, all the outside fibers, not awesome, and it's just simply nothing except refined carbohydrates. That's the next thing. And sodas, which, of course, you know, we're all familiar with now. So just put those on one side, reduce the volume of those, and increase all the other things you like. That's it.
Yeah. I you know, it's interesting, too. My mother is in her 90s. My mother-in-law is in her 80s. And I watch as their diets, as they grow older, they become very, I don't want to say dependent, but their tastes change, and they like a lot of sweets, a lot of desserts. And I understand that, and I understand that's part of the process, too. But when I've tried to talk to them about, you know, eat a little more of the greens, eat a little more of the, you know, fresh vegetables, eat a little more of the meat, you know, not a lot. We're not talking about a 12-ounce ribeye here, just, sure. You know, 4 or 5 ounces or whatever is comfortable for them to do that. And I can't seem to get them back on that track because their thought is, well, I made it this far, you know, I don't need you.
May I make a suggestion, which is going to sound as if it's that I'm saying something, but I'm actually not. When you hear the story behind it, I've got 4 books on this subject that I have written, and on my website, which is simply mynamegrahamcare.com, there's a thing there called the store, the bookstore,
right?
And see, there's a video of myself as I explain what I've done. I bought up the remainders of these 4 books for myself, and I'm actually releasing those at the price that I paid for those books. So I'm not in the book selling business. I'm in the message passing on business rather than have somebody throw my books into a shredder, you know.
Yeah.
And so these 4 books explain exactly what I did with my wife and how I did it, with the recipes I did it. And I tell you, the people have told me this saved my life because I was able to get back to a table that I enjoyed and I felt nourished at the same time. And there's something special about a human being who feels that they have nourished themselves or nourished those people that they love.
Absolutely.
The word nourish is a good word.
Nourish, I love, and we're going to nourish you.
It's Barbecue Nation with Jeff Tracy.
Welcome back to the nation, the Barbecue Nation, and we've got Graham Kerr, the Galloping Gourmet, with us today. Before we get back to Graham, really quick, I wanted to say something. We were talking about grass-fed and natural beef, those types of things. Painted Hills Natural Beef is a proud sponsor of the Quack Shack down at the Oregon Ducks home game, which is where I've been spending some of my Saturdays cooking for various people, some of them just walking in off the street. Painted Hills Natural Beef has no hormones, no antibiotics, no styrofoam, and no Volkswagens in it. And it's beef like Grandpa used to raise. That's Painted Hills Natural Beef. It's a great product. I've been associated with them for years. Yeah, they're great people. And they also believe in taking good care of the, you know, the earth, the land, and all that. So that's why I'm associated with them. Besides that, it's dang good beef. Back with my new best friend here, Graham Kerr. You know, Graham, I could just talk to you for hours. It's just fascinating to me because of all the things you've done and all the things you've written and been able to do, you know, both in radio and television and the books and that, but really more so just the way you've lived your life. I mean, you've lived a very full life, and I think sometimes people are afraid to do that. I do. I just think that, you know, you seem to not only be able to smell the flowers, but you've also planted the flowers, and you grabbed the brass ring, but you also polished the brass ring and made it at the same time. I don't know if that makes any sense to you, but it does. Does to me.
It does. I would love to take some credit for it, but it seems to me that most provocative changes that have taken place in our lives have been a kind of drama at the time when we didn't have much alternative. You know, we either had to give up altogether or we had to move. We had to go to where it was that we needed to go next. It's rather like moving cattle on, you know, to get some better grass.
Right.
And that's what happened to us. We have moved constantly because we ran out of grass in one area and there was more grass in the other. I don't know how else to put it. But every time we moved, it seemed that life got better.
Well, isn't that the way it should be? I mean, in a kind of an esoteric way. I mean, you move on, you move up, you expand, you see new places, you meet new people. New adventures. That, I will tell you, there was a time in my life when I did constant travel, and every week was another adventure into another country or another town or what have you. And then I kind of got away from that, thinking I need to settle down, and I actually took some time to spend with my daughter, who was growing up at the time, and I didn't want to miss that.
Right.
And I'm glad I did that. But now I've kind of gone back out to say it's time to go on the adventures again. So that's kind of my story in that way.
You know, Jeff, I've just finished writing a book called Flash of Silver, which is about Chinook salmon. And a salmon talks to you, the reader, in the first person. Said, you know, I've been born and now I'm eating my first little fly and it tickles on its way down, that kind of thing. And then I relate that salmon's journey to my journey. And what I'm so interested in is the opportunity to be able to find life in its fullness at every level of the journey, downstream, out in the ocean, upstream again. But the thing about the upstream journey that you're talking about now, the reason why you're feeling like you are, is that I think we know that our days are somewhat numbered. We don't know how many there will be. But that we are driven to make that journey upstream in the fullness of the life that is still within us, like the omega-3s in a salmon. That's their energy source, and they're swimming against the river to get to the place that they must get to so that their species survive. And when we look at our lives beyond our own immediate self-interest, that's the very thing that propels that salmon. It's going to so that there will be more salmon. We go because we know that in the interrelationship with human beings, If it's a positive one, it generates real life and real hope for the future.
Hey, Graham, I want to ask you a favor. Will you stick around and do a couple more segments with us?
I should be, of course. I would be thrilled.
Okay. Well, we're
having a good time.
we're gonna wrap up this show. I want to thank Graham Kerr for being with us, but stick around. He's going to be on next week's show, and also thank Kayleen Beaujolais for working with us. Ryan McGarian's coming up in the bullpen, and we'll see you next